Welcome in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580, 95.9 FM. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, here on the show. Always check it out, veritaswellness.health. Always good, pertinent information right there, located at the website, as always. And let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good, Wade. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well, doing well. Good to see you back on the show.
Good to see you, too. Thanks for having us again. Always a great time to come in and speak the truth. Thank you for letting the truth be spoken. So this week we're talking health again. You're the Cure, and we're going to relate it to agriculture and our soil. Chad Wall's with us today again. Natural Ecosystem Restoration is his company. NaturalEcoRestoration.com is the website. Real quick before we jump into this, connect the dots a little bit for new listeners especially. We talk about ag, regenerative ag, on this show from time to time because it's so interrelated. And I think every doctor who goes down this path of root cause resolution medicine or integrative, functional, holistic, whatever you want to call it, ends up in the garden, ends up in the soil, in the agricultural realms in one way or another. Tom Cowden has Dr. Cowden's garden. You know, Zach Bush is doing the farmer's footprint thing, and there's such a relationship between the microbes in the soil, the health of the plant, and the health of the human. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. Real quick, I was on my way to Anson, Texas last week to give a talk. I was listening to an audiobook on the way by Dr. Paul Saladino, MD. The Carnivore Code is the name of his book. And the part I was listening to was really his testimony growing up as a kid with eczema, pretty significant eczema, and treated with the usual treatments, which are various forms of anti-inflammatory medications, either orally or topically. But then in medical school and in residency, his eczema had flared up so bad. His skin was so broken that bacteria got in to those cracked, ulcerated wounds, and he got septic. He got an overwhelming systemic infection from that. And he goes on to relate how it was so related to his diet and the food that he was consuming, the food-like substances he was consuming, even when he thought he was, quote-unquote, eating health food, green juices and smoothies and more of a plant-based diet, low fat, all this deception in the nutrition realm. Long story short, he ended up having to eliminate so many different vegetables and fruits because they triggered his inflammatory condition. Ended up where he could only tolerate meat, which is the carnivore diet. He talked about Michaela Peterson, Jordan Peterson's daughter. And Michaela's story is pretty well known in the integrative natural medicine realm. But when Michaela was 15, 16, 17 years old, she had a hip replacement and an ankle replacement from years of juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. I think she was diagnosed around 7 or 8 years old. Was on methotrexate, Enbrel, all these high-powered immunosuppressants. Still needed hip and ankle replacement, and also had horrible skin conditions, eczema in particular. In her story, listening to some of her podcast, same thing. It ended up being food, and she slowly started eliminating foods that triggered these flare-ups and ended up where she could only eat meat because all the different plant foods, the chemicals found in plants, lectins and the gluten, of course, and just all the different phytochemicals in these plants were triggering this autoimmune reaction. And then I get to Anson to give my talk and had a real sweet patient come up to me before the talk. I've never seen her, actually. She sees one of our nurse practitioners at our Abilene office, Sigil. But this patient went on to relay her story to me, how she had horrible eczema. And she showed me pictures from the first day she came to see us as a patient 3 years ago, and her hands were just covered in cracks and redness and just ulcerations. Just her skin was so broken. And she's had eczema for years and had seen all the dermatologists from here to there and everywhere, and was on the steroids and all the immunomodulators. And then within a week of changing her diet, her hands started to clear, and of course now they're totally clear, and she's just a picture of health. I was very thankful, but just where I'm going with this is this not just a skin condition that Dr. Paul Saladino, Michaela Peterson, and then this patient in Anson, but we see across the board this inflammatory process going on. 54% of kids have a chronic inflammatory condition. All the chronic diseases that are escalating. The first heart attack recorded in America was in 1912, when there was one. And now there's 650,000 people going to die of heart disease this year. And that's an inflammatory condition. Cancer. 1 out of 2 men, 1 out of 2.5 women are going to have cancer in our lifetime now. That's an inflammatory condition. Alzheimer's is tripling every year, it seems like. It's an inflammatory condition. Anxiety and ADD and ADHD and all the neurodegenerative disorders that these kids have, allergies, asthma, eczema, autism, all those A diagnoses that start with A, they're inflammatory conditions. So we are one big walking ball of inflammation. And in a nutshell, and it seems too simple, and let me throw in, by the way, when CDC comes out and says 94% of people that died from COVID in America had underlying conditions, and they had on average 2.6, so almost 3 different diseases that these people had. These are the underlying conditions. They're inflammatory conditions. And I can almost promise you the other 6% that have passed away from only COVID-19, according to CDC, I bet if you looked a little closer, they had underlying inflammatory conditions. You see, you don't get diagnosed with a quote-unquote disease until the bomb's gone off. So you can see lit fuses 10 years before, 20 years before the bomb goes off and you're diagnosed with heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, whatever. So I imagine those others had elevated iron, had elevated CRP, C-reactive protein, had elevated insulin, had increased circumference of their waist, metabolic syndrome that we talk about. 88% of people in America have one of these metabolic syndrome characteristics. It's all related to inflammation. And in a nutshell, where it comes from, the body doesn't have what it needs to function normally, or it has an overabundance of things it doesn't need. And what we see in our practice, and in my humble opinion, what those things primarily are processed food-like substances. We had Dr. Chris Knobe on the show a month or two ago. Go look it up. Amazing interview. And he talks about the vegetable oils. These quote-unquote heart-healthy seed oils. That is probably the number one thing driving inflammation that the body doesn't need. It's a pro-inflammatory fat, and it's a new modern fat. It wasn't in our ancestral diet. So that's number one. Number two, processed grains that have been hybridized to increase yields. And they've been hybridized such that they have a starch content that raises your blood sugar very rapidly. The gluten's an entirely new gluten protein that ancestrally we didn't see. We've hybridized it such that the modern wheat has 46 chromosomes. Ancient wheat has something like 13 chromosomes. And then, of course, processed sugar. These three things, the vegetable oils, the processed grains, and the processed sugar, have no vitamins. That's why it's enriched white flour. If you just ate processed white flour, you'd die, and people did die from it. That's why they had to enrich it. The vegetable oils have zero vitamins and minerals. The processed sugar has zero vitamin and mineral. At least in natural sugar, there's some mineral content to that, some nutrition in it. But those three things, the processed grains, processed sugars, processed vegetable oils, have no nutrient value. And it makes up 60%+ of what goes in the American's mouth. This gets the immune system dysfunction and dysregulated. Much less, not even getting into what it does to our microbiome and our gut. So these people, Jordan Peterson and Michaela Peterson, Dr. Saldino, our patient in Anson, their gut flora was highly disrupted also. There's 99% of what you think is you is not you, it's microbes. Microbes are bacteria, virus, fungi, parasites. They live in us and on us, in our ears, in our nose, in our sinus, on our skin, in every orifice you can think of, but primarily in your gut flora is living in a symbiotic relationship with you, and it directs your immune system to function normally. So there's this obvious connection between food. And if you're going to eat processed food-like substances and you're going to kill your gut flora, you're going to increase your likelihood of dying from COVID-19 and every chronic disease that's out there. That's what we're seeing, this epidemic in America. So this is why we end up talking about dirt versus soil. That's why we talk about regenerative agriculture. I mean, we could talk about the environmental impacts of row cropping gazillions of acres of corn and soy to feed feedlot cows. Just the environmental impact of that. The world's way, the world's system of doing ag versus God's way of doing it, the kingdom way of doing it, is actually beneficial to the environment. We'll talk about carbon sequestration, putting carbon back into the ground via animals and via plants, roots in the ground. But the beauty of regenerative ag, when you get ag right, you get the soil right, you automatically get the environment, climate right, and you get the human health right also. All the side effects, quote unquote, are beneficial side effects. It's so amazing. That's why we're so fired up and passionate about it, Veritas. So I wanted to lay that out there to remind people there is this intricate connection between our farmers, our land, our food, our animal production, and our health, our climate health and our human health. It all interplays, all interconnects. So that long-winded monologue there, Chad Wall, thanks for sitting through that.
I enjoyed it.
I know you've heard it a million times before, and I'm preaching the choir with you. Chad's wife, Jolene, is one of my PAs at the clinic, and they've been walking this path of natural health for a long time, longer than I have, before I even knew there was such a thing as get to the root of disease and fix it. Really, you're letting the body fix it. They've been walking this road. And Chad, for those that are new listeners, was a conventional cotton farmer for many years, went to Texas Tech and Texas A&M to great institutions of conventional agricultural education. Last time he was on the show, we talked about the cross-contamination of the big chemical companies and the education system, just like in the doctor world, the big pharmaceutical companies and the educational system of doctors. A little bit of contamination there that impacts our thoughts, our worldview, and the way we operate in our profession as doctors and as farmers and ranchers. So the correlation between medicine and ag is pretty astounding. And when you can get back to God's way of stewarding your body and stewarding your land, it's amazing what happens. So, Chad, I don't know if those comments evoked anything in you. If not, we can jump into our movie night that we had last week. But first, let me just say welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here again.
Well, I do want to mention if on Netflix, there's a documentary, Kiss the Ground. Watched it last week with my kids and wife. And Chad did the same with his family. Give a plug to that documentary because it really connects so many dots. Gabe Brown, who's been on our show here on the radio before, Ray Archuleta, Gabe Brown and Ray Archuleta, two of the key featured speakers on that documentary. Alan Savory, who I plan to have on the show, was on that documentary. Chad Wall was not, but very well could have been. We were blessed to have him here in West Texas. And I encourage all the farmers to seek out his website, naturalecorestoration.com. Call him up, email him. He has a field day tomorrow. We'll talk about that. But there's so much value in the knowledge that God's really downloaded to Chad and that Chad's been able to glean and pursue from a lot of these guys that have gone ahead of him, like Ray Archuleta and Gabe Brown. But I encourage people to look at that video. It's amazing to take a deeper dive into this. But, Chad, what were your takeaways from that documentary with those guys?
Well, certainly the story that they're doing such a great job of telling is how all of these things are interrelated. And just to step back into, you know, what we've discussed about universities and, you know, and this is not to criticize the university system as much as it is just to understand that we've been covertly conditioned to chasing the wrong target. And so we applaud ourselves really as a culture, especially an American culture, of how good a job we do. And there's a lot of truth in how good a job we do. The problem is that we're doing a really good job of pursuing the wrong target. And we are knocking it out of the park, it's just the wrong thing to be doing. And trying to relearn that is very, very challenging, you know, for a lot of reasons, financially, as well as even, you know, our identity and who we have created or conditioned ourselves to be. Functioning in that is very challenging to rethink what you have thought to believe what was the most important thing to pursue.
Right.
And so in that film, they really bring out the other side of that, this other way of thinking, which actually combines all of these different world issues, world problems that are taking place locally as well as globally, and how all of that relates to the same thing, which is, you know, practicing agriculture in a way that's actually conducive to regeneration. Obviously, why the term regenerative agriculture, regenerative farming exists is because this is what is actually creating soil, which is a living, functioning system with all kinds of things in it, just like the terrain that you talk about. It's not so important to know exactly what's there so that you can seek and destroy it, as opposed to understanding that all of those things have a symbiosis and they have a natural balance. And if we do more of the things that support that and less of the things that are detrimental to it, then we start moving that in a direction that's very beneficial. And it's not only beneficial to our own farm, it's beneficial to our economic system, it's beneficial to our health system, it's beneficial to our environmental system. So the ecology of that is very localized, but it expands very rapidly to a global economy of contributing to the same things where everybody wins. And so that's what we really like to focus on talking about, is that there's in the models that we're pursuing, there's not a loser. You know, yeah. Everybody is actually benefiting from the things that are taking place. And there's some really, really great conversations that are coming out of that in unexpected places. And so, you know, one of the things that that has just begun to be talked about that I think is going to be very relevant here on the High Plains, and, you know, in the heart of the Cotton Belt, if you will, is that there are big name brand textile and clothing manufacturers who are very interested in this regenerative model. You know, so without diving deep into carbon credits and all of the things that we can do to offset some of the damage that's being done ecologically, there are companies that are actually interested in being part of the solution rather than contributing to the problem, that are not just greenwashing their profits. They're actually, you know, concerned for how that all works. And part of that, just like the food system, is being able to relate down to a local level where stuff comes from and how it is produced and what is the overall effect of the way that that's being grown and produced. And it's very encouraging to understand that some of these big, you know, again, big name companies, Patagonia is one that's been publicized, you know, pretty broadly for their contribution to these things. And they're only one of many. I'm not singling them out. But when companies like that are interested in knowing where fiber is produced and the way that it is produced, you know, an organic certification is one thing. And that's, you know, that's a step that I would say is in a right direction, but it's a, you know, it's an incomplete understanding if all you understand is organic. Because I think we've talked about before, if our purpose for organic is to capture a premium in the market and we don't really understand how to support the entirety of the system, then what we wind up with is we get a premium for a production system that still has the same problems, but we're trying to deal with the problems in a less effective and more expensive way.
Yeah.
And that doesn't produce very good results. And so, you know, a lot of people have tried that and they punt and they say, well, organic just, you know, it doesn't work. I can't deal with the insects, or I can't deal with the lack of fertility, or I can't deal with the, you know, the disease pressure or whatever it is. And I contend, just like with medicine, it's because the system is not working. We haven't focused on the things that support the terrain, support that functioning well at the foundational level, so that all of these other things are not problems. You actually just kind of forget that they even exist because they're brought into symbiosis and they're brought into this equilibrium where they inherently keep things in check the way that they need to. And, you know, it's not just, it's not just some feel good theory. Mm-hmm. It's actually, you know, people have been doing this long enough now, just like with your patients, you know, people are starting to know people who have actually seen phenomenal results, miraculous results. And, you know, it's just a testament to how great this thing really works.
Yeah.
If we understand how it works.
Yeah, and we understand that a lot of times our thinking is the biggest problem.
Exactly. That hardest ground to plow right there between the ears, because that ground just doesn't want to budge.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it's very encouraging to understand that at a, you know, on a local scale, you know, we can talk about food, but we're not really a large food production area. You know, most of the food production that needs to be expanded, as we've talked about, so that your patients and the community at large does have the opportunity to buy the things that they need locally, because there's a lot of benefit to what has been contributed to from that local environment.
Right.
But when that conversation expands to, you know, this realm of what you put in your body makes a lot of sense, but there's some things going on with, you know, some certain varieties of cotton and even Pima cotton as opposed to upland cotton, and the lint quality of that, and then that being grown regeneratively and organic, you know, it starts bringing light to this whole other conversation of, you don't even eat all day, but what do you have wrapped around your body all day?
And all night.
Yeah, exactly. What are you exposing yourself to in all of this default time, if you will, that you're not even thinking about it? What's being emitted? You know, what's the energetic properties of all of those things, and how they're affecting all of the mechanisms within your system. And so those are really interesting conversations, and it's great. Again, it's great to see that there are manufacturers who, you know, who already have recognition that are wanting to be part of that conversation and are wanting to get involved at that foundational level to say, hey, we want to, you know, it seems to us that it would be beneficial for the producer or a cooperative of producers to have, you know, have the ability to market what they can source identify straight to the person or the manufacturer who wants to turn that into what they can say is really good. This is not only good for you, and you're going to get a real value from what you're buying, but it actually, all the way back up or back down the food chain, depending on how you look at it, it's also beneficial. Again, nobody loses.
Yeah.
It doesn't get stuck in the middle of corporate profits where the corporation is saying, well, this is how much you can sell and here's how much you can get for it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time telling the consumer, here's how much you can have and here's how much you'll pay for it.
Yeah.
That's not a model that's beneficial for anybody except corporate profits and shareholder earnings.
Yeah.
And we won't go into all that. That's a whole nother show.
Right. I'm not in the mood for that today. We're keeping it positive. Yeah, that was a takeaway I had too, was there's no loser. Everyone benefits. And when you were mentioning the organic, just going organic only, that reminded me of, you know, patients that want to come in. They're on 10 different pharmaceuticals and they want to just flip them into nutraceuticals, natural vitamins and supplements and herbs to treat their symptoms. You know, it's a green version of what they're doing symptom management wise. It's not really addressing the whole system. And when the whole system's in order, it just fixes itself. I mean, the lady with eczema, you know, if people have bad eczema and they heard that testimony and they think they want to come to Veritas to get the cure for eczema, number one, I tell them, sorry, we have a 6-month waiting list. But number two, I tell them, we don't have the cure. Your body does. The name of this show is You're the Cure, and that's not just a cute little title. That's the truth. Number two, I tell them to take veritaswellness.health, go to that website, take the class. We've got a wellness class that will teach you all these things, and a navigator who will walk you through how to practically apply these diet and lifestyle changes. But bottom line, it's God's amazing design. I mean, it will function like it's supposed to. Your skin cells are regenerating all the time. People forget this body that makes us up is dying all the time. The cells are dying all the time. And I talk about the rods and cones, which are cells in the back of your eye. That detect the light, they die every 48 hours and you make new ones. Your skin cells roughly every 4 weeks. They're gone. You've made new ones. The lining of your gut, your intestine lining, it's every 4 days. Those cells die. You make new ones. Liver cells about every 8 weeks. Red blood cells every 90 days, give or take. So you're constantly growing a whole new you, and the raw materials to do that are found partly from what you eat and partly from the recycling system in the body. But what are you recycling? The stuff that the raw materials that you've been consuming your whole life, basically. So it's amazing what God's design will do if you sit back and allow it to function like it's supposed to, meaning you've got to steward it. You've got to give it what it needs and avoid what it doesn't. The other thing that struck me in that film was, and they really, really pounded this home, was the whole carbon sequestration, which we can get into a little bit, because I don't think people really have an understanding of just how powerful. I mean, everyone kind of understands this carbon thing. We're emitting carbon into the atmosphere because we burn fossil fuels. So everyone's looking at solar and wind to try to bring down carbon emissions and move to electric cars and all that. And I'm not saying that's wrong. But the power of the plant to do more, it seemed to me what they're saying was way more than what solar, wind, or anything else can do, is let's put some roots in the ground, get these plants and diversification of species of plants through both farming, mostly they were talking cover crops, but also in ranching with a certain technique of grazing. Alan Savory, incredible. The photos they showed, before and after photos, of basically deserts in China, and I think it was Africa or maybe Mexico or maybe all three, but literally just dirt. There were mountains, there were plains, there were valleys. It was just dirt. And then implementing these rotational grazing, you know, you take an acre, a hot wire fence, and put a bunch of cows on it, but you move them every day. And it, of course, takes years. And we'll get Alan on the show maybe to explain it more. But the after photos, some years later, just incredible. It's like a rainforest. I mean, the grass was as tall as their head. There were bushes and trees and just vegetation everywhere. So if you think about that from a carbon standpoint, when a plant grows, it's sucking that carbon out of the air. It's putting it into the soil. And it's doing it at such a rate that they were showing, I think it wasn't on this movie, but I've heard it from other regenerative ag guys before, in particular, out in Virginia, that y'all just went out. And so,
Polyface Farms.
Polyface Farms. Yeah, Joel Salatin, we've had him on the show. I think it was him that said all the carbon since the Industrial Revolution that's been burned and emitted into the atmosphere could be sequestered back into the dirt if you grazed your land like this, because it stimulates root growth and grass growth, and that puts the carbon back in the ground. So we got to take a break, but when we get back from the break, I'll let Chad talk about that carbon sequestration in relationship to local farming and I think more cover crops, but we definitely have ranchers out here too. I mean, I know some local ranchers are grazing their land this way, but incredible benefit and impact of putting carbon back in the ground, but also the impact on the rain cycle. When you have carbon in the ground and moisture holds in the ground and moisture comes up through the plant root into the plant and it's emitted that way, it cycles the rain cycle. Even locally, you can have an impact on our local rain cycle by stewarding the land this way. So it's amazing stuff. Again, we're with Chad Wall, Natural Ecosystem Restoration. That's naturalecorestoration.com. When we come back, we'll also talk about Chad's field day. I want to be sure if you're a local producer and have time tomorrow. I know it's a little short notice, but Chad will be out on some fields tomorrow that he's been working with some local guys to bring restoration to their dirt, turn dirt to soil. So stick with us. I'm Ben Edwards. You're the Cure.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. You're the Cure, brought to you by Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritaswellness.health. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, right here on the program.
Thanks, Wade. I do want to promote that VeritasWellness.health, our other website, VeritasMedical.com, obviously still up and going. All the archive shows are there, but that VeritasWellness.health is where you can sign up for the class. And honestly, my goal is to get everyone who thinks they want to be a patient, or even if you don't want to be a patient, go take the class. I think at least 50%, if not 90% or more, of people that are sick and think they need the medical clinic, if they take the class and really do what they learn in that class, they won't need the clinic. So that I would love to see our clinic turn into a restaurant that serves local raised food and not need doctors anymore. That'd be awesome. And I totally believe it can happen. I know it can happen. I mean, we've seen probably 30,000 patients in the past 8 years, and our expectation is that they get well and go home. Now, no, that doesn't always happen, but that's the expectation, and it sure happens in the majority of the time, especially when you catch these things early, meaning diseases, especially if it's just metabolic syndrome, which is the number one driver of all chronic disease. If you're greater than 40 inches at the waist and 35 inches at the waist, male and female there, if your HDL is less than 40, if your triglycerides are above 150, if your blood pressure is above 135 over 85, I think is the cutoff, and if your blood sugar, fasting blood sugar is above 110, your metabolic syndrome. If you have any of those, just one of any of those, that's metabolic syndrome. 88% of people do. Well, that increases your risk of Alzheimer's and cancer and heart attack and stroke and autoimmune disease, and dying from COVID-19. It's that simple. If people would just get that message, the Mayor Pope, Governor Abbott, President Trump, whoever runs the WHO, if they were all preaching this same message, what a different world this would be. And I mean, I'm telling you guys, this is the absolute truth, and it may sound crazy to you, but it is the underlying common denominator in all these diseases I'm not trying to say let's eat right, live right to live to be 150. No, our days are set. Our days are numbered. It's the quality of life. And that quality of life score, you should be knocking it out of the park. Your health span should equal your lifespan. You should be healthy all the days of your life. And it used to be that way. Last week's show on breathing with Patrick McKeon, Oxygen Advantage. He turned me on to George Catlin, who was an American painter in the mid-1800s. He left the big city of New York or Boston, wherever he was at on the East Coast, and went to the plains and met with the Indians, lived with them. For a year, he lived with them. Met 200 different tribes from Canada to South America. And he asked every chief of every tribe, when's the last time you remember one of your kids dying? Because 50% of the kids in modern society in the modern big cities of New York and Manchester and London and everywhere in Europe and America back east, you had a 50-50 chance of living past your 5-year-old birthday. It's crazy. And it was because of poor nutrition, lack of sanitation mainly. And the Indian chief said none of our kids die. Unless the rare occasion of an accident, a horse kicks them in the head or a rattlesnake bite or something rare like that. They were all pictures of health. Weston A. Price saw this when he traveled the world in the 1920s in 14 different people groups, from Eskimos to South Pacific Islanders to Africans to native Swedish tribes in the Alps, Swiss Alps. They were all healthy until they ate modern food. And then disease set in, and they died of tuberculosis. So you increase your risk of modern disease and infection when you eat modern food and live a modern life. These are the things you'll learn at VeritasWellness.health. If you sign up for the class, do it. The wellness navigators can guide you and direct you in these things. So you won't need a doctor. You won't need symptom management with pharmaceuticals. Okay, that's enough of that plug. Carbon sequestration. We can put all this excess carbon back into the earth if we put roots in the ground. And if you're a rancher, then if you move your cows around in a rotational grazing, high density, high stock rate. I was talking to a local rancher. His ranch is 28,000 acres, and he has 700 head of cows on that. And I just immediately thought to Joel Salatin, which I know it's a different climate. Joel's in Virginia.
Yeah.
And they get more rain and all that. But still, look at Alan Savory's stuff. It was a desert in China, in Africa. I don't know what the annual rainfall was in those deserts, but probably not much. But using this hoof action and the cows pooping and peeing and just the system starts to respond to that high density stock rate. So Chad, talk a little bit, either one or both, cover crops, put more roots in the ground. The point is get plants growing and get them growing aggressively, and that pulls carbon out of the air. Explain that a little bit.
Well, I don't want to get too deep into the weeds because it's some of it's a little bit hard to follow, and I would say that even to some extent we don't understand every aspect of it, but we understand enough to know that transpiration is actually a good thing. So when you look at an arid climate like we have, and you look at transpiration and evaporation, and that's how you use those factors to figure out how much irrigation water you need to apply or how much rainwater you need to replenish moisture levels and all those kinds of things. And we generally look at that as a, you know, the plant is going to transpire a certain amount, which is very similar to perspiration. It's emitting this water vapor to help cool when you're in very hot climatology. Well, what's actually taking place when that happens is that water vapor again is being released into the atmosphere, and that goes up and joins with other vapor. And then when you have catalysts that actually move along with that, then you get a precipitation event, basically. And I'm no expert on this, but essentially you have to have a particle for all of this water vapor to adhere to. And then once that gets enough water vapor attached to it, then it precipitates back out. And so that pulls the moisture back out of the atmosphere. And that's what we call rain. It's a precipitation event. It precipitates back out based on this adhesion. So there's been a lot of research done in some other arid climates, particularly Australia. There's a guy on the Advancing Eco Agriculture podcast, or Regenerative Ag podcast, that John Kemp does. He's researched or interviewed a couple of researchers that really understand this hydrologic cycle that is very similar to the carbon cycle. They all work hand in hand, but you actually can affect the local climatology, if you will, based on how these microbial particulates are being released and going up along with this water vapor that's transpiring from the plants. And that's, you know, that's joining up with all of this other moisture that's in the atmosphere and precipitating back out.
So the bugs in the soil are releasing some particle that the water vapor attaches to, is what you're saying?
Correct. And so some of this research that has been done in Australia has proven that, and I can't remember, it's exponential, but the effectiveness of this endophyte that is released, so an endophyte being that it's actually inside the plant, so it could have been in the soil, but then it moves into the plant, and it actually is, it's like the things that are living in us, these endophytic organisms are living in the plant, and then that is released through transpiration, from my understanding of it, that gets released into the atmosphere, and the effectiveness of it creating a precipitation event is exponentially greater than the greatest thing that man has ever created to make that happen, which is silver iodide. So cloud seeding and all of that stuff is based upon an airplane flying into a properly structured cloud and emitting silver iodide or something of the like to create this precipitation event. So you have an energetic charge there that attracts these water molecules, and then a lot of times it doesn't work. I mean, you know, that's something that has been called voodoo for a long time, and it's not ever very, you know, it's not ever been very successful.
Right.
To really make that happen. Most people think it causes more damage than good, and I would say that's probably right. Like a lot of things, we think we understand, and we get really good at pursuing this thing that we think we understand, and we think we know what it's going to create, and we create more problems instead of solutions. But this microbial inoculation into the atmosphere, if you will, is very, very effective at creating these atmospheric adhesions that creates a precipitation event. And so in regard to the hydrologic cycle, that's how you can change the microclimate, is having plants that are actually growing. And so we think here in an arid climate, and it's just an example of our not understanding the whole system and basing what we believe we see on an incomplete information. And so I'm not saying that when you have cover crops, that those cover crops are not using moisture. That's the biggest thing that I run into. And I think most people that practice what we do, that this is the biggest obstacle to overcome, is our belief that if we have something growing out there, it's using up the water that we want for something else. So I don't want a cover crop because that's going to take the moisture that I need to grow my cash crop, and I'm not going to have anything left. And so what they talk about in the film, relating this back to the film, they talk about this transpiration actually contributing to rain events. And so, you know, again, it's which comes first, you know, is it mm-hmm. the chicken or the egg? Mm-hmm. Is it the atmospheric moisture, or is it the moisture that's coming, you know, the catalyst that's coming from the growing plant? And so when we relate that all the way back to things that we've heard and been taught regarding forest begets forest, desert begets desert, you know, so on and so forth, it's because of the cycle. And so when one of these things is cycling a certain way, then it's hard to break that cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So introducing things into that contribute, whether that's managed grazing or whether that's cover crops, then not only are we pulling carbon out of the atmosphere and putting that back into the soil, which is beneficial because carbon is the basis for everything. Everything has to have carbon. So when the carbon is just in the atmosphere, it's really, I mean, we can look at that from an ooh, that's bad greenhouse gas effect, or we can look at it from a standpoint of it's not doing what it was created to do because it's stuck.
Yeah.
It's stuck out there in the atmosphere where it's not really doing what we need it to be doing, because we need it back in the soil. We need it in the soil so that it can be the building block for all of these things. It can be the part of the photosynthesis that we need to create sugars and to create root exudates to feed the microbes that are in the soil. So all of that is, you know, if we can look at that from a, you know, what we want to accomplish instead of what we are trying to prevent from happening, then it completely changes our perspective of even what's possible. And you know, I'm not saying that we can wave our magic wand over a dry climate and make rain, but I'm saying if we do more of the right things, then our chances of getting the things that we actually need to take place to happen are much greater, because the system was created and designed to work that way, and it functioned that way for millions of years. I mean, and the writing is on the wall, or is in the books, if you will. If we can just look around and see the research that has been done throughout recorded time, every civilization that has failed is because their agriculture failed, because they got to this spot. Classic example. If you understand anything about historical, biblical perspective, where was the Garden of Eden? You know, well, how in the world, in the Middle East, desert, could you have had this thing? And what changed? And, you know, I'm not going to go into all the details of what may have contributed to the change, but my point is that it wasn't always that way.
Mm-hmm.
And there are places, just like, you know, in the film that, you know, Alan Savory is showing the before and the after. And that's, you know, that's only one example of it's not immediate.
Yeah.
It's, we don't get the instant gratification that we get with a lot of things, but it gives us something to target to. It gives us something to work towards that is that target mm-hmm. where everybody benefits, everybody wins at the end of the day, because yeah. We're doing the things that contribute to all of these things getting better and better and better. And the more we understand about that, relating that to, even our, you know, our fiber that we wrap ourselves in or the food that we consume, all of these endophytes, so these microorganisms that are in the soil that then move into the plant. The plant actually farms, based on a lot of research that has been done and is being revealed now. The root exudates and the synergy between the plant and the soil microbes, we could term as the plant is actually a carnivore itself, and it's farming these things based on what it's feeding to them, and then it's ingesting them into its system, and then these things are moving about in the plant, and they're doing all kinds of things, but then one aspect of that is that then this gets released, and it creates precipitation.
Wow.
And so, you know, so again, when you start doing more of what's right and less of what's wrong, then you change the things that are going on around you on a big scale, not, you know, not mm-hmm. just what's happening on your farm, right. but what's happening in the area. And so I don't think that most people are in opposition to this. They just don't understand it. I mean, our challenge is in the education. It's in the mm-hmm. teaching. It's in the getting this mindset shifted to, hey, we could make this much better,
yeah.
you know? And so just like what you see at Veritas, oftentimes the only thing that will cause a person to really question what they're doing is they got to be sick.
Yeah.
And if the model that you're working in, you don't really like it, you don't really like the government payment and the insurance check and the, you know, the stimulus money and all of the other things that are making it work. But if you're not really sick, then, you know, maybe it'll get better. Mm-hmm. Maybe if we change who's in office, mm-hmm. it'll get better. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe if we change a policy here or there, it'll get better. Instead of understanding that, you know, that's probably not going to be enough.
Yeah.
Instead of we need to understand the way that it works, focus on the things that change it, which is, that's what we do, is we try to focus on all of the things that we know will contribute to it. Number one, understanding what's happening, and then utilizing tools to help change that system. So the way that we graze, the nutrients that we use, we've got to address plant deficiencies, but the way that we've been taught to do that by dumping fertilizer, if you will, on the soil is actually contributing to the oppression of the microbes, and it's creating dependent plants on soluble fertilizers that never make the system better. Mm-hmm. So it's like using a pharmaceutical. Does it cover up a symptom?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it covers up a symptom, and it may even gain you a profitable crop, maybe. But long-term, everybody who's been in that system very long-term understands we put on more and more, and we get less and less.
Just like raising your dose of medication every year.
Yep. So it's very simple if you break it down to the simplest portion of that, which is we need to consider our water. We need to understand how we're using our water, how that's contributing to everything else, how to get structured water into that system, how that stimulates microbes, how that increases the water that we're using efficiency-wise. Then how do we address those plant problems in a manner that is actually building and uplifting to the system rather than a short-term fix that's actually causing more long-term detriment?
Yeah. Short-term easy button answers always have that unintended consequence. So you're doing a field day with some local farmers tomorrow?
That's correct. Yep. So we're going to, you know, in a nutshell, cover our program and the, you know, what's working, what's not, what we've witnessed implementing. You know, what we're doing is not new technology. It's relatively new to this area because nobody was doing it here. So, I, you know, based on the 20 years of my experience in getting involved with no-till farming and soil health, and, you know, there's a lot to that equation that we need to understand so that we know which part is really beneficial and which part is not, because it's hard to have all of it all at once. You know, you can't. It's very hard to turn 180 degrees and get all of it working at the same time, as right. opposed to, you know, here's the tools that you can utilize to start moving in that direction. Baby steps. You yeah. know, if we can take one step in the right direction, then maybe tomorrow we can take two or three. And if we have to take a step back, that's okay. You know, but let's make sure that we take two more forward
Right.
So that we're still moving in that regenerative direction instead of degenerative.
Right.
But yes, so we'll be looking at some local fields. In fact, one of the fields we're treating is just across the street from the station here.
Awesome. Well, Natural Ecosystem Restoration is Chad's company. NaturalEcoRestoration.com is a website. You can contact them through there. And just to summarize in a nutshell, what Chad just said is so fascinating and amazing. When you line things up with God's original intent and his original design, when you encourage these bugs in the soil and you encourage plant health and you hydrate properly, I mean, the plant is putting out substances through the root that basically recruits and attracts and calls forth these microbes to come to it. And the microbes give the plant what it needs. The plant ingests some of these microbes into the root system and into the plant, brings them up, and some of that gets perspired out through the plant up into the atmosphere to cause it to rain. Incredible. Could you imagine if all these bare fields this winter after the cotton is harvested, if they were all covered with plants, with cover crops, and that microbe action could take place, what that could, the impact that could have on not just turning that dirt back into soil, bringing life back to that dirt, but what the impact it would have on the carbon that it'd pull out of our atmosphere, and the impact on the rain cycle. It's incredible. Much less your quality of your crop gets so much better. You improve the quality of your soil, the quality of your crop, and the quality of our environment and the quality of our human health. Just awesome. So
nobody loses.
Exactly. So consumers out there, if you're not a farmer, I bet you consume something the farmers make. So look for regenerative operations like this and look to support them. You know, get in touch with Chad. And there are ways to seek out companies like Patagonia and others who are looking at utilizing these products from these regenerative farms. So, Chad, thank you so much for all you're doing to educate me, educate our listeners, educate the local producers. It's awesome to see what you're doing and be a part of it. So thank you.
Thanks for having me.
For all you do, we'll have you back again. NaturalEcoRestoration.com is Chad's website. VeritasWellness.health is our wellness website to sign up for our class. VeritasMedical.com is where we archive all these shows. Also, Veritas Wellness on YouTube, we archive these shows. Y'all stick with us next week. We'll be back with another great show. Wade, thank you for having us.
And you've been listening to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out the website, VeritasWellness.health.